HH, how have you been?
What's up? What's up?
It's been a few seconds.
Well, yeah, long seconds, I'd say.
Well, welcome, everyone. I'm John C. Morley, and you are?
Hurricane H. And
together, we are one, two,
double impact. There you go. Oh, you got it right this time. With the prompt, though. But hey, why not, right? Well, it's been a minute. We had to practice that, you know.
It's been a minute, and I got to say, yes, it was tiring for me. I'm one of the heads for security in New York Marathon, so it was a long day. I got up at 6 in the morning, catch the train at 7, got to my post by 8:30, and wrapped up by 6:30 and didn't get home till about 8:30.
Yikes. That's
that
a long day.
That was a long day. We had over 2.5 million people, 50,000 runners, and we actually had to close the public access to the park a few times because we ran over capacity.
Whew. Heavy duty.
It was definitely heavy duty. I did get to use my brand new radio, which I never used before. I got to use my DMR, which is digital radio. So I got to use my DMR. So that was a lot of fun. First time I ever did it. I programmed my radio. I never knew how to do a digital program before. So that was my first time. And I had my ID for like 3 years and I never used it. And
was that you talking about like the ham radio? Like a ham radio?
Yeah, so I'm a ham. I am a tech. I got my general. But I applied for my DMR, which is digital radio ID, about a year or so ago. And I got it and I just never used it. And I got the radio last year, but I just never used it. So I programmed it, put everything in there, and I'm talking to the team. I'm like, is this going to work? They're like, oh, we don't know. We have no idea. We have no idea. I was like, well, what if I get it? It doesn't work. Well, we'll just give you a radio. I said, well, like, we're really busy. We don't have time to help you right now. Like, we're really behind.
Well, so you had your own radio as opposed to the cruise radio?
Yeah,
or
so I like to have my own radio. It's a lot better. I can program what I want, my own zones. And I have a TYT now. I also have a Wushan, which was the basic one. But Wushan doesn't do DMR. So the DMR is just it's all digital. Instead of analog, it's digital. You still have to be licensed, but you have to have a special ID in order to use DMR, which you have to go to the DMR website, register for free. And they check to make sure your license is active. And once they know your license is active, then they go ahead and, you know, once you have to actually send them. It was a pain because I had it. You actually go to radioid.net is actually the site. I had to send them my FCC ID, but I didn't have it handy. So I'm like scrounging trying to get it. I have a copy of it. And they're like, oh, the copy's no good. We need the original. I'm like, I don't have the original. They gave me a copy. So I had to go to the FCC and request an original, which they sent through email, which says original, not a copy. Then I had to send that to them.
Well, so for our audiences anyways, I mean, you know, we're talking about ham radio. You want to bring them closer to what does that, you know, what is a ham radio? How does it work? Because most people think you can grab a radio and just start turning.
Well, no, you can't. You can listen. You can listen, but you can't talk unless you're FCC licensed. But they have made a new change for people that don't want to go through all that that standard. They have a GRS license for FCC, and that doesn't require it's called GMRS, General Mobile Radio Service. You can get a GMRS license like really easily. It doesn't take a lot. You have to fill out a form. Basically, they call it a 605 form, and there's some fees, and it's good for 10 years. And you have to agree to some things, but it's not like having a ham license. So my license, in case you guys are wondering, it's Kilo Delta 2 Oscar Romeo Juliet. And so then you have to actually get a digital ID, which you get through radioid.net. Now, the thing about this, which is kind of cool, is that so the reason I got involved with this, being a responder, if all the systems were to go down in the world, right, radio would still be operational. When the power's gone out, when there's hurricanes, all kinds of stuff, my radio is still working. So it's a good way. It's not something you're going to get on every day and just talk to people because people aren't on there that much. But, you know, it depends. I also do field day every year. So you have to be licensed to use it. And there are different classes. You start as a tech. Then you go to a general. And I'm currently studying to have my extra. So each one gives you certain band privileges. So as a tech, you get limited privileges. But you can operate other bands if you're using someone else's ID, like if you're at a club or something, you can do that. But you only are allowed to talk, we call push to talk, if you have a license. And so that's all regulated by the FCC. And your license is good for like 10 years.
So how if you don't have a license, how you can use anybody's, right? I mean,
no, you can't. That's the thing. You cannot use a club's license. You have to have your own license. You cannot get on the radio. It's illegal to do anything but listen unless you have a license.
Well, yeah, but if you were to go on it and just kind of look for frequencies and capture some discussion going on.
You could just listen, but you could not talk.
So if you spoke on the radio, that means you're kind of breaching the FCC airspace.
See, and there's certain rules. So, for example, if you get on the radio and you just started like, hey, you start talking, right away we'd know that you're not licensed. Because the first thing you do is you press the button down and you're like, this is, let go, put it on, Kilo Delta 2, Oscar Romeo Juliet calling to station. And if you don't follow that protocol, they automatically know you're not licensed. Now, if you're also on a channel, and let's say about 3 years ago, I was on other bands and I didn't have permission to those bands. Well, somebody could report me because my ID is not licensed for that band. So you can literally go online and you can find out if people are licensed or not. In fact, with the DMR world, which is kind of new, you could type my name and type my state and my city and you can find my ID to communicate with me.
Now, how's that different from, let's say, those guys, the truckers? And, you know, I mean,
so truckers are CBs.
All right. So it's not the same because, I mean, the common person, it sounds like a radio talk, push to talk, and you got to, you know, turn frequencies up and that's it. Now it's military grade, you know, typically.
Yeah. So licenses are no longer required to operate citizens band. They call it citizen band stations. The G that I was telling you about, the GMRS, it's basically limited service where you can have a few frequencies. It's basically set up so that if you're helping like an OEM or responders, they'll give you a radio program with your GMRS that they've chosen. And there's certain frequencies that are only reserved for GMRS. They won't span the globe. They're just for local communication. So you have two types of communication. In a regular ham radio, you have what we call simplex, which is just going radio to radio. Then you have repeater, which is repeater to repeater. So if I talk to my repeater, the repeater sends a signal back out. But what's interesting about the repeater, without to get too involved with this, in order to talk to a repeater, you basically have to have a password. Although we don't really call it a password, we call it a squelch tone. And the tone has to be one in and one out. If they don't match, the repeater will just ignore your conversation. So there's a lot. If you're interested, you know, you can get licensed to be an FCC ham. And you'd be doing the world a great service. So that's what I do at the New York Marathon. I'm one of the top hams. And basically, we communicate back and let people know what's going on. And we have 250 people on the radio that day, just with our group.
Well, so just a curiosity for people who have not, you know, I mean, it's one thing to watch the marathon and another one to operate in it and facilitate some of the services. So how was that experience?
Well, this is like I've done this like four times already. I didn't do it COVID. So the New York Marathon takes place in Central Park, if any of you know the Tavern on the Green in New York. So that's kind of like the base for it. And then basically there's like a dirt road and we're like down the back. And every part of the marathon, wherever you're going, has places you can and can't get into. So I have a 1-2, which is a pretty high level. 1 stands for operations, and 2 is just my area. So 1 is like all operations. So in order to get in like certain places, like for example, if I want to cross the finish line, if I don't have a 1 on my badge, I can't go near the finish line. If I want to go near the tents, I can't get near the operations tent if I don't have a 1 on my badge. And so they're looking, they're security people, and they're watching to see if you have a certain number on your credential. And what makes matters even more fun that day is so you get there, and before the whole race starts, about 2 weeks before, they're getting people dropping out. And I got into this, by the way, by accident. I don't know if I told you this. So a good friend of mine, in Franklin Lakes was sick and said, hey, John, can you help out with the marathon? I said, I guess. I don't know. And so they asked me to come and help. And I get there. And I can't get anywhere because all the streets are, like, closed. It was a mess. And so you have to get your credentials. They give you your credentials and your jacket. And when I get there, I said to the lady, I said, I think I've got the wrong credentials. She said, oh, no, this is your name on it. I said, I'm just a newbie. Like, I'm just, like, an operator. I'm not, like, operation anything. She said, no, this is your name. This is your thing. So apparently they had promoted me, and this was only my first time. And I was like, oh. And it was just kind of a learning experience. But when you're there, HH, and to the members all watching, it's this whole underground world, okay? So, for example, we have six fully mobile ICU hospitals. That means that if somebody needed help, whether that's massaging, and they were very busy, whether it's surgery, they have full surgery centers there. The only time you have to leave the facility is if somebody was going to die. Other than that, they can handle everything at the facilities at six of the mobile hospitals. And these tents are huge. They're not small. They are huge. And each one of them, to give an example how many first responders are there, and they're like the red, we've got, I think they had about 10 doctors, and I bet they had, I got to say, they probably had close to 1,500 responders. And so they have one tent just before the finish line, because some people, like, they pass out just before the finish line. And then there's a tent about 500 feet after the finish line. Those are the people that don't realize they need help, but they can't make it anymore, so there's a tent there.
Wow.
And you've got operations, you've got phones, you've got numbers. So you've got 26 point some miles. There's a mile captain. There are different people at the miles. So I run family reunion. So I'm getting thousands and thousands of people. I'm making sure people understand this is family reunion. There's no access to the park here. On my left is ANC. On my right is B&D. And it's just trying to get people's questions. Oh, I'm looking for P. Well, you're on the wrong street. So it's just, it's doing that. It's making sure people don't cause any problems. I had six cops with me on the street. It was a very, I'll say, non-eventful in the sense of safety, which was good. But it's a long day, HH. I mean, you're on your feet literally all day.
I've had a few events in my life, so I can relate to those long days standing, especially when you're doing activities, festivals, and parades and stuff. So I, you know, a lot of years back, you know, we used to do a lot of sponsorship in like the Puerto Rican Day Parade and some other ones.
So you know what it's like. This is a little more. This is challenging because you're on your feet and you're fast going. So like, if somebody's here, you got to go here. Whoa, wait. You can't go in that way. That's not an entrance. Security's over here. Like, you got to be, your eyes got to, like, be all over yourself.
Well, yeah.
I had six cops this year on my street. Last year, I had two. We had 20,000 last year. We had 50,000 this year.
Wow. Well.
So the other thing, too, is that people all want to go over to the park, right? And I guess they don't know that every November 3rd is the New York Marathon. And, like, you know, this has been going on for years and years and years and years. And people are like, what's going on today? Well, Trump's in town, and we're just trying to block the streets off. Really? No, it's New York Marathon. Oh, that's the day? Yeah. Oh, how long does that last? An hour? No, it lasts till about 6, 7 o'clock at night. Oh, my gosh. How do I get in the park? Well, you got to go down to 61st. 61st? This is 66th. Right, you got to go down to your left, 61st. Do you have a ticket? If you have a ticket, you can go to 62, and you can get to the grandstand. So it's a very a lot of people, HH, don't listen. And, you know, they don't get what's going on. But there's so much happening. I mean, they've got a mobile call center, okay, which is their command center. And I got to tell you, they got to probably have about 200 people in there. In our RCC, radio command center, we have four people there. And we're patrolling 250 people. But then we've got the whole net control in another tent, which handles medical, which handles everything. So there's a lot going on there. And we have the FBI. We have the CIA. We have the NYPD. We have FEMA there. So we have a few agencies there.
It sounds like a logistical nightmare.
Getting there, I got to tell you, when you get there in the morning, I had to leave early. I'm in New Jersey, and there are no buses really leaving here until 7 a.m. So I got up at 5 a.m. That's the real 5 a.m. after the clocks had to basically, you know, they had we had to go back. So 5 a.m., got up, had breakfast, got over to the bus stop in Willowbrook about 6:45. 7:02, it took off. I got to New York. Then when I got to New York, I had to grab, I believe it was the A or the E, which I had to go uptown to 67th Street. When I got to 67th Street, I had to weasel my way around because by like 8:30, they start closing streets off. And you have to go meet somebody to give you your credentials or you can't go anywhere. You're like locked.
Oh, so you don't have the credentials prior to the start? You know, I mean,
that makes sense, but they don't seem to be able to get them to me in Bergen County. So she said, don't worry. She says, just call the person when you get here and we'll meet you at the gate.
Ooh, that's a risk.
So I'm on the radio. I'm feeling like, K2RJ, I'm at the, where are you? I'm at the main gate. Okay, we'll send Joyce out to you. Well, I'm here 10 minutes already, and I can't go anywhere. All right, we'll send somebody to you, and they give you your bag. You have your bag with your jacket in it. You have your credential in it. You have your New York Roadrunner pin. You have your two hats. You have your cap.
Well, so just, I mean, who's running the show? I mean, it's a pretty big operation. I mean, you know, is that a marathon organization or?
New York Roadrunners.
Oh, that's actually who's putting it all together.
The New York Marathon, the New York Roadrunners.
Oh, okay. Listen, I mean, again, for our audiences, even for myself, I mean, I've seen it. I've never participated, but does this start at Staten Island, like by the Verrazano or something? That's the start point, right?
So, which are you talking about? The main race?
The main race, yeah.
The main race starts out. I'm trying to remember the exact street it was starting at. That was back around. It covers the five boroughs. The Hunt meets. So it was basically, it starts on the Verrazano Narrow Bridge on the Staten Island and passes through Brooklyn, Queens, then to Manhattan, and then the Bronx, and then finishes into Central Park.
What was the quickest yesterday? Do you know? Like the first one to cross?
I don't have it off the top of my head. My main thing was just making sure people weren't getting injured.
Safety first. Well, you know, so talk about safety. You know, you talked about when we kind of briefly talked about the ham radio, and you mentioned something interesting about that when everything else doesn't work, radios work. I mean, that's something that for people to really, you know, maybe we can spend a minute because I know you're a tech, you know, guy. It's true. I mean, you get a hurricane, you get some sort of a storm, whatever it is, you know, blackout, whatever. You know, the cell towers are dead. You have no cell phone access. Therefore, you can't talk. We've experienced that with Sandy.
What about when it snows?
Snows, yeah. You know, the poles, you know, get frozen, whatever, trees down.
Like, I'm such and such. What's the weather on this? What's on this? I can't get, yep, no problem. I had somebody, I was radioing to somebody because they couldn't get help because the cell phones didn't work. And I got somebody up to somebody to help them because they were stuck on a road.
Well, that's again, it happens. But the question is, you know, people need to be somehow equipped in the event of these tragedies or whatever, like disasters and things like that that can happen. Which again, nobody, you know, knows when they happen, but they do happen. I mean, with hurricanes, I think we're probably still in the last phase of the hurricane season, I guess, right? Ends in mid-November or end of November. So again, it's not over yet until it's over, as they say, right? So but when you have something like that, you never know. But phones will drop, you know, you're not going to get signal through because the cell towers get, you know, knocked out, whatever,
Internet will drop.
So if you have a radio, like a lot of people get the walkie-talkies, right? You can get it from Walmart and maybe like, you know, Dick's Sporting Goods and whatever those places.
They're limited to what channels. So what you really want them to get is a scanner. So they can get a scanner. Some scanners will let you listen to police, but no more because of security reasons. We don't want police talk going over a regular scanner or a fire. So they're encrypted.
Well, they had even apps actually for that purpose. I mean, there is an actual radio app that you can listen to. I mean, I don't know if it's still there, but I know
most people are using the radio, the digital. But yeah, so the thing is the radio, the reason we have a radio practice call like every month to check, we call it a radio net, a check-in, to make sure everybody knows what to do. And we just literally call in. And so, like, they'll start at 7 o'clock on a Wednesday night. And I'm like, okay, this is the call for the such and such Frank Links net. If you're here and you're trying to call the net, please call now. And then I would basically call in KD2ORG, calling from home. My signal seems good. I'm checking in. Come back. And they come back and say, yep, John, we read you loud and clear. Thank you for checking in with the net. Any other stations, please call now.
Interesting. Well, but again, but
go through that whole process.
But that's with your ham stuff, right? Being a licensed. But like for the average Joe and Jane.
Joe, you have to realize they're only going to be able to listen. And they can't do much with listening, right? It's a step up from a weather radio.
Right? Well, but how can they communicate? Let's say you want to talk to your loved ones and you kind of stranded a little bit. And
they can't use the ham unless they're licensed. They can use GPR. But you have to realize the GMRS I was telling you about is only for local. Like, I can talk to Italy. I can talk to different parts across the country, depending on how the solar system, how the Earth is in certain places, because certain impacts of the waves, depending on with the solar, whether it's night, whether it's day. So you've got to be licensed to communicate.
No, again, I get that. That's for the ham, for the big stuff. Yeah. But for like the average person, I mean, you know, walkie-talkies, couple of miles radius.
CB, you do not need to be licensed for a CB. But remember, CB is not going to go long range.
Yeah. So what's that range? And just for people that may be interested, if you know.
CB range. Hang on, I'll tell you in a second here. Maximum range here for CB radios. It's going to be for CB radios, you're going to get 50 miles.
All right, well, that's pretty decent. I mean, if you're local enough.
At 5 kilometers to 30 kilometers, depending on the terrain, they'll expect to get somewhere between 20 and 50, depending on conditions and depending on the situation. I mean, to give an example, we use the CB a lot. My name was Red Baron 2, so it's a little different than the ham radio. And the first thing they teach you when you use the ham radio is throw what you know out about the CB because it doesn't work. It's not the same rules over here. So I pick up the thing like breaker. This is Red Baron 2 asking for a 1036. Come back, anybody. And so if you don't, now we don't talk like that on ham. So a 1036, for example, is what time is it?
Okay. We're going to get a crash course on codes right now.
Well, yeah. So it's, you got a 1036. There's some other things, like basically we call them CB short codes. Like I said, the most important one, like, is a 1036. Another one is what's your 1020?
It's like that. Those are the same used by police, like 104.
Yeah, 1020 is what's your location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we refer to it as what's your 20, eh?
Yeah, 1020. If somebody might say to you, what's your 10? So 1036. It allows people to know for subjects for time. 1036 is a very, very popular one. The one that the police use more, things like 1053. We got a 1053 at 7 and 6. And so rather than alerting people what that means, only the field knows what that means. That means one man's down.
Ooh.
If we got a 1054, we got somebody that might have stopped breathing.
I guess you'd have to learn these codes when you're a first responder.
So you got somebody else's body. Hey, look. Yep, come back. How's my 10-2? Yep, you got a great signal. Hey, breaker, 10-3. That just tells you to stop transmitting. Like, I'm in the middle of something, like, don't bother me. Hey, 10-6, or 10-7, I'm out of service.
Well, if you want to, like, you know, maybe signal an emergency. What do you say?
911. What kind of emergency? So
accident or something.
Well, you would be getting on. You would be getting on a different frequency. You'd probably be going right for the Coast Guard or for the police.
Oh, well, Coast Guard would be mayday, right?
Yeah, well, like for example, if I said I got 1027 9. Okay, that means I'm moving to channel 9. 9 is the police. If I say, I need help, I need a 1045, I'm here at such and such Marina, 1045, please. All units within range, please respond to me.
That's cool stuff. All right. Well, again, but you know, there's the other thing. I mean, now we talked about the CB, the ham. Now, I mean, landlines, right? I mean, a lot of people don't have those anymore, but they still work better than cell. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, it might be recommended for people to maybe maintain a line. They're cheap enough to keep.
I do. My big issue right now, I don't know if you've been having this happen in your office. We've been having it happen in our office. We're having happy with a lot of clients. Optimum had been going down once a week, and then it's twice a week. Now it's as much as once an hour. And then today it was once every 15 minutes.
Well, let's not jinx it, because that's what we're operating on right now.
Well, they've been having lots of issues. I have filed complaints. They have 250 cases against them from the FCC.
Ooh. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I blame the fact that the foreign country, they allowed the foreign country, the French, to buy. They should never be able to buy a utility in the United States, and we should never be able to buy a utility overseas either.
Say that one more time. I mean, are they owners of Optimum?
They should not be able to buy a utility overseas, and they should not be able to buy a utility here in the United States.
What does that mean? Optimum is owned by a French?
Yes, it's owned by the French.
Okay. Oh, oui, oui. It's a French.
But it is owned 90% by the French.
What's the name of the company?
Altice USA.
Oh, Altice. Yeah, Altice is an old French telecom. Yeah, so that's...
Oh, you know them? Okay.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, I do have some French in me, you know, from a Moroccan and French root. So I can relate to some of those words, but I didn't know that they took over here.
Awesome, but the problem is they haven't done service, HH, in about 25 years. So we're getting issues like... modems are just dropping for no reason, and it's things like there's maintenance, like there's bad ports, there's bad amplifiers, and every time you call them, they're like, oh, there's nothing we can do, it's your equipment. No, it's not. The best was this, HH. I called a lady, and I told her I knew what I was doing. I told her I'm an engineer, and she's trying to explain to me how my modem is supposed to work. So I'm like, okay, you're going to teach me something new. I said, the lights are going out. She's, oh, sir, she says, that's nothing. She says, that just means you stopped using the internet. I said, excuse me? She said, when the lights go out, that just means you stop looking, you just stop searching for something. I said, are you serious? You just not know what I'm saying.
Uh-oh. The lights, I think they heard you. They cut you off, man. I'm sorry. That was funny. You said that and you were like, you came choppy. So I mean, I don't know if it's my feed, your feed, but so I guess we're both enough to.
You can file complaints at the FCC. But I just learned something. I have 50 complaints in with the FCC right now and 7 with the Board of Utilities. So the Board of Utilities in New Jersey cannot go after the cable company because they're actually over state lines. They're over lines. So they have to be regulated by the FCC. Well, the FCC isn't doing anything yet unless you want to spend $800 and then you can take them to court and they'll help you as well. They get about $800 to file a formal complaint with the FCC. Informals are free. Formal complaints are, you have to pay for them, and you have to show up in Washington, D.C.
Oh, Tom. The consumer has to pay to actually file a complaint?
For a formal complaint. A free complaint is free. An informal complaint.
Well, I mean, so let's define that. If I call right now and I say, yeah, I'm filing a complaint, that's not formal? I mean, that's just...
No, go to FCC and you can file a consumer complaint all day long for free. And they'll pass the complaint on to Optimum or whoever the issue is, and they'll get people out and they'll have to give you some lip service, you know, and then that's all they can do. If you want them to enforce anything, you have to pay, and then they'll file a formal complaint, which will be a hearing. And right now there's 250 case of the Section 110 of Optimum in Washington for next year.
Well, that's news. Hey, see, folks, now you know, if you're watching and you have cable, well, I mean, whatever, a service provider.
I said, I have 107,000 people. I said, I'm going to let my audience know why I'm going out. I'm going to let them know it's Optimum's fault. Oh, well, I said, I'm not going to lie to people. Why I got knocked off the air wasn't my fault. I said, it's your fault. I even told myself, if you guys keep this up, I could lose my broadcasting license. So if that happens, I said, we're coming after you.
Well, you are a registered journalist. You have a media company.
Some TV stations will ban you if you are, let's say, neglectful or intentionally breaking things, even if it's not your fault, if you keep doing it, they will break you from streaming to their service or being on their server, their net.
Well, so let's talk about that. I mean, you know, even TV and all these guys, I mean, they do use internet, so they have a provider themselves. I mean, and the providers are the same ones in the area. So how does that work?
It's just where they're coming out of, so different places. And I will also tell you this, companies that are using DHCP, no issues. The static is having lots of issues. There's a lot more overhead to manage the static.
Well, you just throw an acronym there for most of us would be like Chinese right now. No offense.
Dynamic host configuration protocol. It means when you plug in your modem, you get a number automatically. Every time you connect to the internet, you get a different IP number. When you're static, you pay $10 more a month and you get the same number all the time. Helpful for people that want to run cameras from home that can't use a DYNS service to map their number. Or somebody that always wants to tunnel into their computer and know the number, they can use a static, but they got to pay extra for it. So Optum's having issues with the statics. And literally, like I said, in the office, and we're working, like all the phones go down. They list, everything goes down. The phone goes down, internets go down, cameras, everything goes down. So you know there's a problem. So recently, I've called them now at least 20 times. And I said, you know, I said, I'm getting ready to file a formal FCC complaint against you. I'm going to be number 251 in Washington, D.C. I'm going to submit these calls that are being recorded here to the judge and let them hear what we're saying. And so then, because he told me we can't get you anybody, now magically that I said this, they now can get me a supervisor. I've been asking for a supervisor for 2 weeks and they couldn't get me one.
You know, what's with that? I mean, like, you ask someone on a call center, I need to speak to supervisors, and they give you like hell about it. Like, you know, folks, I can never get that. I mean, listen, you know, I don't want to brag, but I mean, at a higher level than a supervisor, you know, and someone wants to talk, you know, I would be available to them. And you know, in, at least in our industry, you know, if someone wants to talk to the president, they can talk to the president of the company. You know, I don't get that concept when, you know, when someone calls in and they say, hey, can I speak to a manager, a supervisor, a director, a VP? I don't know. Literally, the president. I mean, we've had people call to the president.
First, let me get your problem first. Look, I already told you, ma'am, I don't want to explain this to you. Please respect this.
Well, that's it.
Three times to please transfer me. So when I talked to this one guy, I said, oh, David, I said, I'm the person you don't want to talk to. Oh, I said, I'm getting ready to sue you. So I was hoping you could probably get me up to a manager, maybe prevent that, because we're going FCC filing court, formal court, UCC filing. And he said, you want to talk to supervisors? I said, yes, I do. All right, let me see if I can find one for you. Oh. Now I suddenly can find one for
you. I'm sorry. That's funny, that expression. Let me find someone for you. I mean, if anyone that manages a call center, there is supervisors in every corner of that call center. There's no way you can operate a call center without supervisors.
They're not there, but you can still get
of course they're on the line. I mean, you just kind of switch over to them. Well, that's the other thing.
They're all in meetings right now. They're all in a meeting right now. They're on a conference call.
Yeah, that's bull. That's BS. Well, here's the other thing that I don't get is like when you speak to these people, you know, and they want to transfer you, you know, like whatever happened to warm transfers, you know, like, I mean, that's a pet peeve of mine. So I mean,
what happens now is they, because you've gone through the whole call, like, hi, yeah, I'm going to get my supervisor. So they tell you who it is. They answer the phone. Thank you for calling Optimum. Good morning. My name is such and such. I said, good morning, such and such. Are you a supervisor? Yes, I am. Okay, fantastic. Thank you. I said, are you aware of my situation? No, I'm not. Okay, you know there's an issue. Yeah, I heard some words back and forth, but no one told me anything about what your problem is. So I've called them multiple times, and then I told this one person that they gave me the wrong information. Then the lady says, oh, she did give you misinformation. That's not correct about the modem lights going out all the time because you stopped searching the internet. Like, I was like,
well, you know, so this is actually, I want to say this. This is a message to whoever, you know, gets this show eventually today, tomorrow, and a million days, years, okay, whatever. Bottom line is, if you run a company that provides a service in a call center and a customer service call center specifically, let's be clear, folks. You know, I think there's room for improvement. So process improvement should be a part of the stuff. You know, I guess effectiveness optimization is a key word that we can use. You know, we need to start looking at these things. I mean, you have all these surveys, you know, please hold for, you know, a brief survey so you can give your 1 to 10, 1 to 5, you know, rating. Well, but I mean, again, what's the point of having that? I mean, at the end of the day, the idea is that you want to service, you know, the clientele or your customers and be able to guide them through the process, right? Well, if that's the case, then we have to look at these calls and listen and do more stuff and educate, I think, the staff. I think that's the other part that I've seen, that it's lack of training. By the way, I'm not saying this just for this particular instance. Even in our industry, I've experienced that with call centers that, you know, that were in my own company, and we had to actually, you know, really present the cases of these particular customer service reps that actually didn't do a good job. The other thing that I don't get is that if you want a full experience, an easy experience, I mean, the CRMs are so advanced today, whether it's Salesforce or Zoho or any of the ones that are out there, you know, they can get a lot of, you know, process easy, meaning that you in the call center, someone in a different department can see the notes real time. And that's the thing that I don't get. Like, you know, why is it that, you know, some of these companies are still like silos? One department, you put a notes here, no one sees those notes.
They don't get the number. So like I put the number in or they get the caller ID, like we get the caller ID to pulls up the record. She's like, oh, I'm sorry, your caller ID didn't come through the system. We are having a system problem.
Well, you give them your name. They should be able to look you up. It doesn't matter. There's like at least few common demographics that they can ask for you to get. And if they did that, the last note should always be there, and they should be able to see that real time.
The other thing they should do too is, okay, can you hold on for just a moment? I'm going to put you on hold for 2 to 3 minutes. Now, that's okay, 2 to 3 minutes. So I said, lady, I said, this is 2 to 3 minutes. I said, I'm timing you. So she comes back in 2 minutes. She says, I'm sorry, sir. She says, I'm going to need another 2 to 3 minutes. She comes back to me. I said, where are we? She's like, I'm still working on something. I could need it from her. I said, look, I said, why don't you work on a call back? I said, what's taking all the time? I said, if you don't know what you're doing, with all due respect, can you please escalate this call up to someone? It's obvious you don't know. Okay, well, the problem is with your modem. Ma'am, the problem's not with my modem. I just went, well, this is why the number, ma'am, I don't have time to educate you. I guess you must have missed the training.
So again, that's another piece of this message that, folks, first of all, this is not to blame any individuals, you know, specifically. It's really the structure of how the company, you know, puts these departments together and the infrastructure they give them and the training that actually they receive. A lot of these folks, they get basic training. They don't get all the different, you know, aspects. They know something, not everything. They're not really tech savvy all the time. And I mean, obviously, if they spend time on the call center long enough, they'll learn, but you get a lot of newbies that may have, you know, just and sometimes they guess things, or they don't want to ask the questions, or like, you know, so these are things that can be easily facilitated and kind of really worked around. Not a big deal. Again, simple process. I mean, again, with AI now, I mean, literally they can, you know, adopt AI, you know, concepts where, you know, someone calls, that information is completely, you know, given to them in a summary. And anytime the call comes in, boom, you have a summary of the last few, you know, this person is, you know, irritated about this and the other, whatever. And it could be different things, but again, I can give you guys hundreds of possible, you know, solutions to a lot of these problems, because again, part of what I did, you know, in my world is look at these things to improve process, right? And, you know, it's always good to do that. And by the way, it only going to make life easier. You know, the call times will be, I mean, obviously when you're a call center, you have KPIs, and some of the KPIs are like how long you're holding, how long you, what the drop calls, you know, ratios, all these things are there. Now, if you can, you know, and staffing ratios can be a problem if you're like spending too much time. That's the other thing. You know, it's the balance between like, how do I finish this call quickly and still service, you know, this individual. And sometimes that goes the wrong way, and then someone can spend a couple hours with one individual. Now the calls are like, the volume is piling up. It could be a lot of things, folks. You know, we're not going to solve the problem of call centers today.
And it could be the fact that you don't hire the right people and you don't have skill-based routing. So if you need somebody technical, please don't give me somebody who can barely read a script. Give me somebody that actually understands what the IP is. I talked to one person, I said, the IP is wrong. The what? The number. What's the IP? The number you program into my router so I can get out. Oh, okay, you have internet problems? No, my IP, my static IP is wrong. Oh, okay, we don't handle that here.
Well, that's the other thing, like, you know, so that you have layers of customer service, you know, levels, right? You have the basic entry.
Skill-based routing.
I mean, you got the operators that just take the call to handle the light stuff, and then they escalate you to the next department, maybe the tech guys and the savvier ones. And by the way, you know, I've had great experiences with all this. But what we're talking about is the general, you know, idea that these things are happening, and a lot of people are frustrated. And the one thing that drives me nuts is, and I don't care what company you call today, the IVRs are just, they're not meant for you to actually call and talk to a representative. And those auto, you know, responses, you know, robotic stuff that we hear, you know, I can't get that. If there's a bee that goes by, a fly that goes by, you know, it disrupts it. I mean, it's really that bad. You know,
I couldn't hear you. Goodbye.
exactly. I didn't say a thing, right? You know, like, what's with that? I mean, you know, listen, by the way, I'm not talking because I don't know this business. I've run, you know, call centers, and I know how they operate, and I've run the policies for them and the quality and all the stuff for that. So when I'm saying this is stuff that I've implemented and I worked against, you know, and for to improve and make sure that people get the best of the best, you know, service they can get. Now, granted, you know, different departments, different, you know, levels, as you said, skill sets are needed for these different units. But at the end of the day, the IVR is the easiest thing. Like, sometimes just the order of the IVR could be, you know, stuff. If
They're going for sales, service, support. And then the thing is, what we do in our IVRs, if you're really having a problem and if you're not calling for a touch phone or if you're confused, like, just remain on the line and you go right through to a live person. Like, if somebody makes a mistake and we see they're having an issue, transferring you to an agent. Like, we're not even going to try to even ask you again. If you make a mistake, transferring you to an agent, like, immediately.
Well,
and you have to go to the IVR. You're going to go to an agent. How can I help you? Sale, not a problem. We'll get you right to sales.
Well, you know, John, there's one more thing that drives me nuts. I didn't mean to cut you off, but it's really breaking my head. And since we're getting excited about this topic, you got me started. You know, the other thing is, like, when they say, you know, we can call you back and you're not going to lose your place in line. But then do they realize that people have something called a VPN? I mean, it is very common today that people have VPNs on their phones. And there are services that are, you know, provided by the carriers. For example, if you have, you know, Verizon, AT&T, whatever. And so your VPNs are your protective, you know, for your IP, whatever, and your identity and all the stuff. A lot of people kind of filter calls. If you're not on my note, like, I can tell you this. If you're not on my, you know, my phone, you're going to voicemail. If you don't leave a voicemail, I'm not calling you back. So that's just a simple thing. So, you know, when these calls, you know, tell you this, and you can save the number. Let's say you have Optimum on you, like Optimum Customer Service Hotline. And by the way, we're not picking on Optimum, but, you know, we're talking just in general. But you have the number on your phone, but the call comes in from some sort of a 800 number or some you know, toll-free number. It's not on my phone. It's not going to register. It's just going to voicemail it or even drop it, you know. And that's the thing. So I just lost my spot on the stuff. So now I have to wait an hour or stuff. What am I supposed to change my phone setup? I mean, there's got to be something to be done about these things. And you know, the system should recognize if it's a, you know, I don't know, if it's a VPN, maybe there's an override to it, you know, for those things. Maybe there's something that they can tell you. Here's a number that we're going to call from, you know, so you can actually remove it.
The number will be calling you back from an area code 908-432, or they'll tell you that usually.
Well, if they do, then that's fine, but they don't tell you anything. I mean, remember, I'm talking about when it's automatic, you know, response. They say, you don't even speak to someone. It's just the system says.
I had this the other day. I was on hold with somewhere. And they said to me, you will not lose your place in line. Press 1 to continue holding or press 2 for us to call you back. Great. We see you're calling from. Would you like us to call you back at the number? Yes. Please note, you'll be receiving a call back from phone number 908. That was like, okay, please be sure to wait for our call. Then I get a call back. Before I hung up, it's like, now, would you please state your name so we can announce who the call is for? So at the end, they're like, can you please say your name? So I say my name. It's like, so they call back, hi, this is Morgan from XYZ, and we're looking for, and then they say my name. I was like, that's kind of cheesy. Like, they shouldn't have to say my name, but it's like.
Well, again, at least yours, that was not a bad experience. I mean, for me, that shit doesn't work. Sorry. they just don't come through. I mean, I have to tell you, like, it's a pain. I have to call back. So I'm like, you know, no, press 2 or no. I just wait. I'll just, you know, do my thing, and the phone is on speaker until I get someone on the phone.
82 minutes to speak to a representative. We'll call you back.
And you call them, you call at 8, you call at 12, you call at 5, you call at 6. I mean, some of these places, you can't even get
home. We're so busy right now. We've got like 500 calls because we have this, we have that. I'm like, well, that's not my problem. Like, you know, it's like.
Well, I mean, again, if anyone runs call centers, they know this. Mondays is usually the worst days, you know, I mean, because everybody and their mother is going to call first thing in the morning. So you expect high call volumes in those peak hours. You know, it gets a little better, I guess, towards the end.
Government, a tip for you guys. You ever have to call the government. You can call the government and you want to call the government at 7 a.m. in the morning, not a minute earlier. If you call them after 7:30, 8 o'clock, you might be waiting for an hour or two. If you call the IRS, if they recall them, call them right at 7 o'clock. You'll get right through.
You get right through the IRS. That's actually, I would say that's exciting. I mean, damn immigration. All these agencies are tough. Morning,
I dial the number. Good morning, IRS speaking. This is Ms. Jones. Agent is like, wow. I was like, wow.
Well, John, what the hell are you calling the IRS for, man? Well, that's one unit you don't want to call.
So I'll tell you what happened. So actually last year, we had some bad hacker have all these protections, but people still lie. And they actually filed a false return on me and my business.
Ooh.
So, not my business, just me, not my business, my state and IRS. So we're trying to file this year, or it was for last year. And we tried to file, and he said it was declined. It was declined. Then he tried the state. That was declined, too. So I called the state first. And I said, yes, my name is Tamora. I said, yes. She says, and you're still working in Texas, right? No. She says, and then she gives me an amount of money. I'm just going to give it a note. She says, so you made more than $6,000, right? I said, yes. She says, well, this says you made $6,500. And you're still a server at Casa Luedo? So what? You're a bartender and a server at Casa Luedo in Texas? No. She says, well, did you file for a W? Did you file a regular return W, or did you file a Schedule C? I said, I have a Schedule C. I have several companies. She says, well, this person revoked the Schedule C and just did a individual return. I said, well, that's not me. Just hold on a minute. We're going to get you over the fraud department. So I talked to the fraud department. So now this year I've got to get a number to file my return. And they did that on the state level. So a cautionary, even though I had all these securities, somebody just decided to take my number and just file it.
Whoa, time out, because again, for people watching and listening, this is like, you know, kind of concept, right? You know, why would someone even do that? And definitely, how can they even file if they got to have your social security or something to do that?
So what happens with a lot of these companies where they've had leaks, right? Your social security number is on file. Even though I have all these protection services and they watch, they protect credit card accounts from getting open, right? Or bank accounts from getting open. They don't protect filings from the IRS or the state. So somebody on one of these services, I don't know which one it was, but it was one of these stupid services that, you know, it could have been a payroll company that had a data breach. And my social security number got out and they couldn't open a card. Says, oh, gee, we'll file a tax return on this person. Then the best was they claimed I made $6,500 I made, and they were claiming $5,500. So they were going to send me a letter asking for more information. They put down $6,500, but they were claiming $5,500 in deductions. So they were going to send me a letter pretty soon to ask for more information about why I did that.
Well, you know what's funny is like
it's much lower than my regular income too.
Well, I 65 is like, you know, what is it, over 6,000 whatever? Then you can file. So they went to the bare minimum.
Because they said it. She says, and you make more than $6,000. I said, she says, well, this return was for $6,500.
Yeah, which is basically just put the borderline. But that's not even the issue. Now here's the thing. How stupid? I'm sorry, you know, to state it this way, but how stupid can you be to even mess around with a hack? With the IRS, with documentation for $6,500, that's going to get
they
you
did
no.
Electronically. They did electronically.
No, they did. But
they did through VPN.
Oh, no, I get it. Where are you going to get a return from? Where the return is going to go to? To a bank account? You know, I mean, yes. To an address? That's trackable.
They provide a bank account in Los Suedo, Texas.
Well, guess what? You know, that's very trackable. I mean, you have to be dumb. I'm sorry, you know. Like,
well, they figure if you get the number and you track, you get it through, and the money's in, they get the money, they close the account, and they go off to the Cayman Islands.
With what? $2,000?
You're talking about people that operate their lives out of coffee shops. Do you know what that's like? So back in the 80s, when I would go to New York a lot, they would have these cafes, okay? cyber hackers weren't so big back then, but they were more concerned of damage to the computers and things like that. So what they would do is you'd pay, I think it was $1 or $2 a minute to get on the internet.
Yeah, yeah. Cyber cafe.
I think it was like $1 or $2 for maybe 5 minutes or 10 minutes.
Internet cafe.
Yeah, yeah. So you'd put it in. So when you're all done and everything's done and you click, the computer would reformat itself and re-image itself back again. So basically, they didn't care what you did on the computer. They were re-imaging it every single time. And so what happens is people sit at these things in Las Vegas, all over, and Venezuela and stuff, and they're doing. But the best was when I said to the person, they brought a modem to my customer's business the other day, and I said, as long as that's not a UV, I said, we're fine. Oh, so that's all we have. I said, those are on recall right now. If you turn the modem upside down, it actually shuts down 80% of itself unless you have the patch, it could catch on fire. Oh, you know, you're right. I was reading something about that. My customer's like, don't you dare put that in here. I said, yeah, I know. I was like, they just like, and it's a recall from Venezuela because they didn't manufacture the modem correctly. So whenever the modem goes on its side, it shuts itself down by 80%. It overheats. But the best is the reason they weren't selling Aris, which were great modems, they hadn't paid Aris's bill in 3 years. So Aris wouldn't let them sell any more modems.
Wow.
I do my digging.
Well, you this is your word too. I mean, it's you're in the mix, literally. I mean, this is stuff that you've been doing for a long time, and
one or two years.
Yeah, and you understand it, you know, and you understand all the you understand the tech too. You're an engineer, but you know, by education.
I'm going back to school, and I actually just got a fellowship. I'm going back in January to school at night.
For what? Another engineering?
AI. I'll be teaching computer science twice a week. And I'll be doing my master's twice a week at night.
AI?
AI. Ooh. Artificial intelligence master's.
All right, dude. Let's get some AI application, you know, running.
And then I'll take a 6-month sabbatical, and then I'd like to go back for my PhD.
Well, you're determined, I got to say. John?
I like doctor in front of my name.
John, it's got a good ring to it.
Yeah, doctor.
John Morley. Dr. Morley.
Dr. Morley.
Dr. Morley. All right.
I think the big issue that I'm bringing out here is that a lot of people don't understand the fact that when something's wrong with a public utility, you should complain about it. Just joined the Jersey Cable Group, which is pretty cool. So now I have connection with 50 cable companies in New Jersey, and we're all kind of upset with what Cablevision's doing.
Whoa, hold on. Did you just say 50 cable agencies? Because most people think about three. I mean, Verizon, you know, I don't know.
50 cable stations in New Jersey.
Oh, cable stations. Okay.
Stations, sorry. But they're big.
All right. No, because when you said that, I'm like, huh? Yeah, I thought you were talking about.
You've got Verizon, you've got Optimum, and then you've got a new one now, Plant Networks, who's going to start dominating the world very soon.
What is it called?
Fiber all over the place.
What is it called?
Planet Networks.
All right. Well, I'm assuming that's just all states and, you know, maybe
not
worldwide.
Yet. They're only in Sparta, New Jersey, and they're rolling slowly around the counties.
Well, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, when you say they're, you know, doing the fiber optic stuff, I mean, Verizon has their Fios, which is fiber optics, but that was underground for the most part, but they don't have it everywhere.
Yes, and right. So, like where my customers are, they couldn't get Fios because there's no Fios there. And you can't get Fios in a lot of buildings, so Optimum's kind of got you by you know what. But what you can do if you want to pay money, just $1,000 a month, and you can get Lightpath to come in, which is a higher version of Optimum, to run your own dedicated fiber. So it's $1,000 a month. You have to have 3 tenants or more that subscribe to it, and you got to commit to 2 years.
Well, as a business, you're talking about, as a business. Yeah, but for residential, you know, that's
a problem. They are starting to pipe in fiber, but we're looking at 5-6 years because I was talking to Optimum. They're slowly getting rid of their coax. So the big reason you want to get rid of coax, it's issues, it's maintenance issues, but you can only push 980 on the download and only 50 on the upload. That's its cap. You can't go any higher than that. That's it. If you want 1 and 1, which is 1 gig and 1 gig, you have to go to fiber. You want 2 gigs. So that's a big limitation on coax. You can only push up 50. You can only pull down 980. They say 1 gig, but you can't. You can only pull down 980. So they kind of say, well, it's around a gig.
Well, they have a 2 gig too, I think.
Not a coax. You're not getting on coax.
Oh no, on fiber they do. I mean, they have
more. You'll get 2.2 on fiber. You'll get 1.1. But if you're concerned about your upload on coax, you're only going to get 50 on the up. That's a big difference.
Well, so anyone who's got no access to fiber, they're going to be kind of, you know, on the lower side of the upload and download.
They're
going
to have to stay that, or they're going to have to do wireless or something like that. That's the other thing. But it's unfortunately, a lot of these cable companies right now, they're fighting neck and neck. I mean, they are fighting neck and neck. And now you got companies that are trying to now sell your phone service that are your wireless providers. Like, what business do they have of selling a phone system? And if they want to do it, great. But they're doing such a half-a job that, like, I had a client, they put systems in, and then I'm like, what happened? Oh, well, that's all we do. So, well, you left them in a mess. Oh, we don't handle it from there. You know, we're just salespeople. Well, you got to call our tech company in Idaho. Are you kidding me? Yeah, I'm just a sales guy.
See, I don't like that. I mean, sales.
Got his money and he's done.
Yeah, salespeople are the front line. I mean, they're the last, you know, the first line of defense, I would say, you know, when it comes to these things. And they're supposed to do the right thing. And it's not just dump and leave. That's not how it's done. I mean,
they don't answer the phone afterwards. They see your number. Sorry, I'm so busy this weekend.
See, that's what that puts a bad rep, you know, on all salespeople out there. And that's not, or the professional sales, which I don't really appreciate, you know, personally being, you know, that's my bread and butter. Not cool.
People call 24 hours a day. I mean, if you need support, call 24 hours a day. Somebody will help you. And, you know, you get some people that call you, you know, people that call at 3 a.m. because they forgot their password. That's fine. But, you know, you keep making a thing of it, you're going to get charged extra for that because, you know, we're not here to provide password resets at 3 a.m. because you can't remember your password. We're talking about people that are having major issues.
Well, no, yeah. I mean, again, it has to be reasonable, too. But
well, they're like, oh, I forgot my password, or I suddenly can't get into my phone. Okay. I forgot the password to my phone, or I don't know how to get in my email. 3 a.m. in the morning, if that's an emergency. Is somebody dying? No. I just decided I want to check my email and I couldn't get in.
Yeah, most of the businesses, they close at a certain hour. So, I mean, some services are 24/7. So I think if you promote it as such.
Because we do hospitals and doctors and things like that, and that's okay. But even them, they don't call later than 10. We used to do the restaurant industry and we stopped that because we had a lot of those restaurants just sort of burning down. So we would have to do support to restaurants sometimes till 2 and 3 in the morning. But they were terrible, HH, because they would never pay. And the installation would go in, and a year later, the place would burn down, and the lease wasn't paid off.
For the equipment?
Yeah, and the equipment would just disappear. The place was burned, would just burned, had a fire.
And was there trace of the equipment burn, or the equipment just vanished before the fire?
The whole thing was burned so bad, we couldn't even find the equipment. It was, like, so bad.
Oh, okay. Well, that's sad to hear. I mean,
happened though several times. I think it had to be planned because every one of these, when they weren't paying the lease for 2 months, magically a fire happened.
Well, now that's we don't want to speculate here, but you know, there's something called insurance fraud, and that's especially when it comes to, you know, that stuff gets investigated. So hey, you know, don't do it.
And the fire was so bad, there was no way to investigate anything. I mean, it was so bad, the fire. I mean, you're talking about a fire that was burning for 2 days. The police department, the fire department, took a day to put it out.
2 days? Oh, no. So, yeah. There's...
that ain't going to be too easy to detect. Everything was charred.
I guess there's still some high-tech stuff that they use these days. I mean, you know, I mean, again, there's also trends. I mean, obviously, you can get away with things. But if you repeat, you know, the same pattern over and over.
It wasn't the same restaurant. Same industry. Each restaurant only did it once, and then they closed and started another one in another state, but only once in the state. So they only did on one of their restaurants each day, but then they'd move it to another state.
It's like that going out of business trick,
yeah.
You know.
Unfortunately, went out of business and it reopened in Florida.
Yeah, they're all going out of business, you know. Like some stores, they're going out of business all the time, you know.
Well, let's talk about Fridays is declared bankruptcy now.
Yeah, they shut down. Yeah. Well, some of them, are, at least the ones around me, they've already closed.
They're trying to reopen or something.
Well, to be honest with you, I mean, again, not today's topic, but They used to be hot, you know. They used to be good, you know, back in the days.
They were good. I did enjoy them. They were very good. I did enjoy them.
But not in past years. I mean, I think last few years they haven't
gone there in probably 5 or 7 years.
And you know, I haven't either. But I mean, maybe like 4 years ago, just about, you know, before or after COVID, I forgot what it was.
I dropped Applebee's too. I used to when I was in high school. My friends, we always used to go to Applebee's. You know why? Because at that time I drank soda. I don't drink soda anymore. I would go there because they had the largest soda container I could get, the Lotus glass for the flat price, so they could keep refilling it. So I knew that was the largest tumbler. But their food was all laced with terrible stuff. I mean, it was not cooked well. It wasn't grilled. Yeah. It was all fried crap.
Yeah, again, we can have a whole chapter about, you know, a discussion about what the food industry is and how it is. Because, I mean, on our nutrition piece, we've been, you know, deep dive on that. It's crazy. I mean, it's, you know, yeah, we on the next one, let's touch the topic of food.
We're not eating what we're eating. Yeah.
Yeah.
But to get back to cable and to ham and everything. So if you do want to become a ham, you can go to your local OEM department, Office of Emergency Management in your town, and say, hey, I want to get involved with emergency management, and would you sponsor me to be a ham? And they'll be like, sure. Love to have you be a ham.
Bro, you're talking ham and the holidays, dude. We got to flip people here. So,
radio operator.
Okay, let's keep it real for the people, you know, just in case, because people get like.
You can go there. You can do that. You can also become a CERT if you want to, community emergency response team. But all these things, you have to take tests and stuff. So you got to commit. So you get a free radio. I got a free radio several years ago, but the radio they gave me was okay. I still have it as a backup, but it wasn't my own personal radio. You know what I'm saying? So when I bought my own personal radio, by the way, I'm a big avid fan. I don't get anything for mentioning the name, but I love RT Systems. So RT Systems is a software, only it's professional software. It's only like $25 or $30. And you can program, you have to buy it for each radio that you have, and you can download and push things to your radio in seconds.
And how much does a typical radio cost?
So a typical radio, when you're saying typical, what do you mean by typical?
I mean like the standard, you know, basic ham radio that you would buy.
So if we're talking HT, like we're talking like a, if we're talking like a, you know, like a handheld, you know, something like that.
Well, I'm thinking about those stationary ones that have too many dials and they look like from the 60s.
Well, you've got to get familiar with it, right? So if you get a TYT, like a TYT is like about $140. That's a 10-watt digital two-way radio, IP67, and then, you know, and they come with the cable already. When you buy them, you get the cable already. If you want to get like a, and that's a DMR. If you get like a, one of my favorites is the, if you're talking about, you know, like, you're talking about more like a bench radio.
Like yeah, that's, you can, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so like, one of my favorites is probably going to be, I mean, there's a lot that I like. You're going to spend anywhere from, you could get anywhere from $300 to $1,200,
$1,500. Oh, so it gets steeper as you get better value, better equipment.
It depends. Like I said, if you're going for like a, I mean, you can get a Wushang, you know, HEP for like $40, but it's also not digital.
On TikTok?
No. You can go on Amazon. You can go different radio places. You can get a Radio Diddy for $300. So I mean, again, if you want to get something like a top name, you're gonna pay a little more money. You know what I'm saying?
I'm sorry, you lost Mad Diddy.
that's just the name of a radio company.
I get it. You know, it's just the controversial, you know, Diddy business going on in the world. So.
so basically what you have to figure out is this. You have to figure out what is it that you want out of your radio. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing. If you can't figure what you want, because you're going to just dump money into a radio, right? And then you're basically not going to be able to do what you want. A lot of times people rush to go buy a radio. I mean, you can go buy, like I said, you can buy a Wuxon KG for $114. You can buy, an amateur radio in a better class. You can buy like the Wushang is a very basic brand. It's not the highest brand. It goes by the number of watts. If you're going to go with a radio at your home, let's say you want one that has 125 watts, then you're going to go with like an ICOM. You're going to spend some money on that, though. That's going to be like $3,000 for an ICOM.
Okay. So
you got to figure out how many watts that you want. If you want something, you know, most people don't need a radio that has, you know, that many watts on it. You know what I mean? So it just depends. But I like ICOM. ICOM is a nice radio. You don't have to buy the latest, and greatest ICOM. You can buy one that's less. And I would probably tell you that, you know, you're going to be getting more than likely, you're probably going to get a fixed or mobile. I would probably say you're going to buy a radio that's probably going to be around 45 to 50 watts. And you could buy an ICOM. You could probably buy an ICOM like a 50. You could buy that one for, you could buy a nice ICOM IAC F5021 for probably like around $550.
Well, again, I mean, it's an investment, but I mean, the question is...
But that's just the radio. That's not the power supply. That's not the antenna.
I get it. So it adds up. And then the thing is, it depends on how often you're going to use this, right? So if you are literally OEM and you're like a first responder, it may be worth, you know, a while. But if
a free radio. When you join the team, you're going to get a radio, okay? And you'll be able to play with it, only listen, but not talk. Once you get your ham certification... as a basically as a tech, which is the very first level, you will be able to use that radio once you graduate from that, and then you will have access to certain bands. So that's how they basically do it. We call it tech ham band privileges. And so you have to know what you can do and what you can't do. The other thing you have to realize about AM and the amateur radio club is that you cannot use your radio for business. This is a big one for a lot of people. Let's say I'm selling a computer. I cannot go on the ham radio and say, hey, KJ, I got an i7 such and such, new Supta computer. I'm starting the bids at $1,500. I cannot do that. That's illegal.
That's funny.
You cannot use it for any kind of advertising. So if you look at like a typical, they have UHF, they have VHF, and then they have HF. If you just get a hands frequency, I mean, that's going to suffice, you know, most people. And then you also have things which is called CW, which is basically like Morse code. So you have to know which bands you can operate on and which bands you can't. You have to know that you can't talk in a CW band.
Well, obviously, you got to learn these tricks. I mean, there's process for this.
There's guides.
Yeah.
You basically have to look at the guides and then... they want to make sure that you understand the safeties of the radio, how to use it. Do you know how to properly operate? Do you know the proper protocol? Like, do you know there's a military channel out there? There's a ham band for military. You are not allowed to talk on the military channel. You're only allowed to listen. There is one exception to that rule. You know what that is? There's one time you could talk on the military channel.
War?
No, they have a day every year where they open the military band for everybody. It's a military field day, and you're allowed to communicate with the military people on that day.
Cool. All right. Yeah, listen.
You cannot. So you just have to know your stuff. So if you're getting one of these radios, and you know somebody wants it, I would set it up for them, but I would set it up so they couldn't talk. That's what I do for a lot of people. I'll get the radio and I'll program it, but it will not be able to talk. I'll program it so they can listen only, but not transmit. And so it's just a matter of knowing the frequencies. You look those up and it's fun. It's a hobby. I have a doctor, a friend of mine who's a client, and he does POA. You ever heard of POA? Mm-hmm. Parks on the Air. All right. So Parks on the Air, all this is free. Basically, you can go to a park. You can connect to a park or you can activate your own park. A park is where you register on the site, you set up your ham radio on the site, and you get people trying to communicate into your park. So basically, you set up a station, but you register with POA Parks on the Air, and you go there. Certain parks, they charge you. Some parks are free. But basically, everything in the ham radio industry is free. They do something called National Field Day, and I would encourage the listeners, They called Ham Radio Field Day. And we have this every single year. It actually happened already. Field Day is June 22nd to June 23rd. And that's the time when people can stop in and learn about what, you know, ham is all about. And it has nothing to do with sandwiches or bread. It's it's all about frequencies and it's all about emergency. But what we do is meant so that when there is an emergency, we're prepared. We're not playing around with, oh my gosh, how do I use the radio?
So quickly, since we talked about it has nothing to do with food, what does ham, I mean, is that an acronym?
Or is it just what does ham stand for?
Is it an acronym or is it just, you know, just been, I mean, it's gotta be some point to where it started to become called that way.
It's basically an informal term for amateur radio operator. It originated in the United States in the early 20th century, roughly. It became widely used around the 1920s. The term ham, was originated as a term used by commercial professional radio operators, and it comes from the term ham telegrapher. Telegrapher, ham telegrapher, which was used to describe beginning telegraphers in the 1880s to the 1890s. So some say the term may have come from the idea that telegraphers were ham-handed or ham-fisted, meaning they were not skilled. They were very basic.
Well, I see. Got to ask the questions. Well, so there's one more thing. I mean, we exceeded an hour here, but since we missed a few sessions, you know, it's okay. But here's the thing. Now there's satellite phones. You know, I mean, that's kind of like, you know, the cool stuff to have. I mean, how does that work in comparison to this? I mean,
so you don't need to have a license to use a sat phone.
That's it? I mean,
no, there's more.
Okay.
I want to know how much does a set, how much is a satellite phone is the next question you probably want to ask.
I was going to ask, yes.
Yes, so they're not very cheap. How much you think the cheapest one is?
One time I was looking, there's a couple of $1,000 for, like, you know, a used one.
Get you a little cheaper, and then about $800.
Brand new?
Brand new. We can get you into Satcom for $800. That's by Blue Cosmo. It's not the best one on the market, obviously. You can get the Blue Cosmo one is $2,295.
Oh, see, now we're talking.
And then the 955 is the beginning only true saddle 24/7. That's only $1,150.
Well, here's the thing. But, you know, what people don't know, it's not just the phone. That's the equipment. You still got to buy the service.
Yeah, so that's another point I was going to mention. Yeah, so how much is Satcom? You think how much is Satcom? Satellite phone service, if you had a guess.
Oh, I forgot. I mean, I did look it up a while back, but I completely forgot. I mean, I know it's not cheap.
All right. So to give you an idea, I mean, this is always changing, right? So satellite plans, they go on a couple different things. Blue Cosmos is one of the – they're probably one of the biggest plans. So they have, it's called airtime, just like you do with, you know, like your regular things. And they basically call it Iridium, Iridium Global, Iridium Sat phone. So you probably like an iSat phone. So an iSat phone global plan is $45 a month. Now, here's the little kicker. You ready?
It's the minutes.
For 15, how many minutes you think I just told you? You get 15 minutes for $45.
Yeah, so imagine if you talk a few hours.
Okay, but we have better plans. If you want to talk more, we have more plans. There's a 60-minute plan for only $59. Just $1 a minute.
Well, I mean, it's not bad. If
you want to talk for 200 minutes, well, we can do even better for you. It's only going to cost you $119 a month for 200 minutes. 12-month term. You also pay extra $10 a month for voicemail. For US for a US number voicemail is $10, and then if you want voicemail plus with Dick is another $5. So this is meant so if you're trying to make call, but I do want to let you know that Apple has a satellite service. Did you know that?
Nope.
So Apple has what they call emergency satellite service. Okay, it's available on the iPhone 15 and the iPhone 16. And
really?
So, yes. So the way it works is you can use it for texting emergency service via satellite. You can do SOS via satellite, so you can text as well. Now, the thing about this, so you have text emergency service by satellite, you know, you can share information like emergency contacts, emergency SOS via satellite. So you have to, for the SOS via satellite, it's going to be an iPhone 14 or later, and you have to have, 16.1 or greater OS, which most people have. So, you know, that's not a big issue. The big problem, though, with it is you have to be, remember, you have to be in line of sight.
Of satellite.
Yes. Now, the good news is Apple is giving away SOS free for 2 years. Then you pay.
All right. So just to summarize, so on your app, your phone 15 or 16, you can do the SOS, which will be through the satellite.
Yeah, you have to be outside. You have to be pointing to the satellite, press the button, and it will send to the satellite, send up to the satellite, and you can receive communication that way.
Well, not in general. So you would call another satellite phone, or you just can call any number?
No. You'd be able to do SOS communication. It's an SOS system only.
For the Apple, but in general, if you get one of those sat phones, you can just...
That's different, yeah, yes. You'd be able to not call just a sat phone. You'd be able to call any phone number. Because what it's doing, it's going to satellite and it's going through a PBA. It's going through a phone station and it's going to go out to lines.
So nice. Well, I mean, it's a backup plan to, you know, if someone really needs this stuff, I mean, it might work.
The real thing that'll blow your mind, I'll just leave it. So with all these people going out with cable, I'm actually doing one tomorrow. I had a customer of mine and they keep losing their service. So I'm like, you know, this is really nuts. So what do you do when your service keeps dropping other than panic and scream? So we got him a device. It's a couple $1,000 device. And we can actually put up to 2 SIMs in that device. When their service drops, it automatically makes a call on one of the SIM cards. So we can go to Verizon or T-Mobile. As soon as the service drops, bam, we're making a connection out with the other card.
So they never lose service, basically. They have a backup.
1 nanosecond and you're already connected to the new service.
It's like having a generator. Yep. Well, I mean, yeah, but if you're a business and
it's a data plan, but you're also only getting 100 gigs to start. The more you go up, the more you pay. So I think more services are coming out that people are going to be, interested in and what they're going to be doing. But I think the big issue with all these services is going to be safety and security. And the last thing I want to leave you with is, so when I got my new iPhone 16 Pro Max a while back when it came out in September. We weren't on the air, so I couldn't give it to you. But and we have a video we're putting up soon to explain to you about the new phone. But what I want to tell you is they have this new feature on there. It came out, I think it was in version 17-something. The 17-something version, what happened is when I went to go to the new phone, I had to erase my phone, all that stuff, after I got everything on the new phone. Right? Normally a pretty straightforward process. No. After version 17 or higher, which I was on 18 point something to match this phone, I could not delete the phone because it said that I'm not home. I was in Naples, Florida. So it says for security reasons, you've now entered a security delay. 59 minutes. So I had to wait 59 minutes, use my face, wait another 59 minutes. When the 59 minutes passed, use my face again. Then I could unlock the phone to be able to erase the phone. Turning off things like find my iPhone, the security delay, and then erasing the phone. If you send a phone back and you haven't done those steps, you use your $1,000 rebate because they think you're tracking the phone going back. I was at the New York Marathon the other day, yesterday. I couldn't install the New York Marathon app until I waited 59 minutes because it noticed I wasn't home. So it says we want to make sure it's you. So we're going to wait 59 minutes before we allow you to make any modifications to this phone.
So you can only modify things if you're on your basic Wi-Fi, like, and it knows where your location is.
Yes. So you can, your basic home, it knows your GPS, not your Wi-Fi. It knows your coordinates of, like, if you're within, if you're not, let's say I'm in the same town, I've got to be within 500 feet of my home. Or 500 feet of my office. It has to know the locations that I'm at. If If I go to a location once every every 2-3 months, that's not enough. So I bring this to your attention because Apple's rolling out many more security features, which is hopefully going to make things better. And if you guys are wondering, because everybody's always wondering, Apple just released their brand new patch, which if you hopefully you've gotten it, it is 18.1, which is their brand new patch. Now, this is not 18.0 when this is truly 18.1. There was a big bug. Hopefully they fixed it. Every time I made a voice call using an app, my phone screen would go black and I had to reboot the phone. They have a new feature in the phone that if you put the phone to your ear, it blanks the screen so you don't touch any buttons while you're on the call.
That's a 16?
Yeah, 16 Pro Max. Yes, that's a new feature. So I'm just updating now to the 18.1, which the 18.01 was good, but it had that bug. I had to reboot my phone. And by the way, to reboot your phone, you just touch the top button, bottom button, and you hold the right button down until the phone reboots.
So quickly, before we close today, what about those internet to go, you know, cards, whatever they have them? Like you can get a portable device, like a MiFi concept. But
Sure. Just like I can make my phone a hotspot if I want to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what about them?
Well, they have these, like, you know, take your internet anywhere, you know, piece that you buy a service.
Has that in it too. This $2,000 device has that in there too. Has that option there too. So basically, it's just a hotspot, just like a jetpack. I mean, they've been around for a long time.
No, but what do you think of them? I mean,
what's that?
Safety wise.
Safety wise, I mean, they're okay. They're just basically using. They're using Wi-Fi. They're not crazy. I did just put in on a side note. We might have to cover it for next time. I just spent the money and I put a brand new Wi-Fi 7 technology in, which is 19 gigabits per second. So my internet right now is Wi-Fi, but my connection here is only 1G in. My laptop could now handle, if it can support it, could handle 18 gigabits per second. Now, this laptop can't do this because I think this one maxes out at like 10, but my next one will probably be able to do that. So Wi-Fi 7 is a lot better. It has less crashes. My devices don't collide with each other because now there's 12 or 16 points for thing as opposed to 4. So the Wi-Fi 16.7 router's gone up, but the prices are going to go down. Very, very stable Netgear router, extremely stable. And now they made a little tall tower instead of this flat box. So Wi-Fi 7 is the latest and greatest. And if you're looking to change your router, I definitely would tell you to go to Wi-Fi 7. There are 3 different flavors of the Wi-Fi 7. So you can spend like $300, $600, or $1,200, depending on how much Wi-Fi you need. But you could still get the Wi-Fi technology, just depending on how much square footage you have in your home. But I have to tell you, there is a huge difference from even Wi-Fi 6, which I had, going to Wi-Fi 7. It's so much more stable. And when you go to make a change on the router, it doesn't take 3 minutes every time you click a button. So I update my Wi-Fi usually every 3 or 5 years.
All right. Well, I guess we're coming to the end of the show, dude. I mean, we didn't...
Be back again. When will we be back again?
Well, was it the first of the month, I guess?
The first of the month again. So we'll be back December 2nd.
Is it? That's the first Monday?
That's the first Monday of December would be December 2nd. The first is a Sunday.
That's it. All right. Well, listen, we kind of took this discussion, you know, to the world of tech and telecom and Wi-Fi and a little bit of a rant on call centers.
We did. Absolutely. We absolutely did. So I think a lot of people hopefully gain some knowledge and maybe at least if they didn't gain a lot of knowledge, maybe at least they now know maybe the questions that they need to ask when they're dealing with these situations. So right. I'm John Seymour, a serial entrepreneur. I invite you to check out BelieveMeAchieve.com for more of my amazing, inspiring creations, which we have quite a few of them. Every single day, the Inspirations for Your Life show. And this week, we're talking about the power of intercessions in your life. What are they, and how do you implement them?
We also on the radio.
Yes.
Saturdays at 9 p.m. Was it Behind the Mic?
Behind the Mic, yes. It's on Saturday nights. Yes.
And, yeah, I mean, LinkedIn, I mean, you're all over the place, you know, TikTok.
That's why BelieveMeAchieve.com is a great place to go. You just go there and you can share this. And also, I want to let you guys know that we are going to be announcing our first in-person keynote. I'm really excited for this. It's actually going to be, we gave it a date. I believe it's going to be January. We haven't announced it online yet. It'll be the 21st of January at the County College of Mars. It's entitled, basically, Keynote, Light Bites, and Demos. So we'll be talking about balancing AI in the healthcare industry. The ethics, the technology, the compliance, all with some delicious light bite hors d'oeuvres and some refreshments at the County College of Mars. And right now, I think admission's only like $10 or $12, which is a steal.
So if you're in Jersey, New York, you know where to go. All right. Well, so that's it, folks. This is the end. I hope you enjoyed it, as John stated, and we'll be seeing you next month.
All right, everyone. Be well and happy Thanksgiving, because we won't see you. Don't eat too much turkey.
That's right. Turkey business. Bye, folks.
Bye, everyone.